Hey y'all, welcome back to New Slang. I'm your host, Thomas Mooney, and this week I'm sharing two episodes that were recorded down in Marathon, Texas. This one right here is part one featuring Courtney Patton, Walt Wilkins, and Drew Kennedy. So this past weekend, I was down in Marathon, Texas for the Marathon Songwriters Festival. This year's lineup was Drew Kennedy, Josh Grider, Walt Wilkins, Courtney Patton, Kelly McQuee, and Bobby Hamrick. So the weekend, it was incredibly fun, and I highly encourage y'all to attend sometime, like next year, for example. And at the very minimum, make one of those weekend trips down to the Gage Hotel. Just an incredible place to unwind and unpack. Specifically with this festival, the Gage, Drew, and really everyone involved, they bank on those things that naturally make Marathon and songs and art special. It's the focus on the craft, the stories behind those songs, and the intimacy of this kind of trip that makes it just special. There isn't a bunch of red tape and cones and VIP sections and all that kind of stuff. You're able to have a genuine conversation over a beer at like a place like the Brick Vault. And there's plenty of other pockets and spaces where you can just run into these songwriters and have that one-on-one connection. And so naturally, you know, we set up a pair of mics and got everyone to sit down for a few minutes. All these, they are in that 15 to 25 minute range. And I basically ask them all the same five questions about West Texas and songs. I'll be running all these interviews in the same order as they were recorded. So this episode right here is with Courtney Patton, Walt Wilkins, and Drew Kennedy. Which, just so we're all on the same page, those five questions, they are: what's your favorite memory attached to West Texas? What is your go-to West Texas song, album, or artist? Is there anything in your catalog that has those roots down in West Texas? Has there been a teacher who you feel helped guide or nudge or encourage you to become an artist? And since we are such great partners with Desert Door, Texas Soto, and they were in town pouring drinks and converting the locals over to Desert Door, what's your go-to Desert Door drink? Which, let's use this natural segue and talk about Desert Door for a second. Today's presenting partner is our pals over at Desert Door Texas Soto. If you've been listening to New Slang for really any amount of time, you'll know that Desert Door is one of my all-time favorite premium, high-quality spirits. If you haven't or aren't sure what exactly a Soto is, I'm going to let you in on a little secret that's going to up the game on your liquor cabinet. For starters, the best reference point that I can point you to is to think about a tequila or a mezcal. Do you feel that Western Desert, that Texas ruggedness? Okay, Soto is like that, but a little bit more refined, smooth, and fragrant. It intrigues the palate and offers these hints of vanilla and citrus. There's an earthiness that often sends me right back to my Trans-Pecos and Far West Texas roots. There's plenty to love about Desert Door. For me, it all starts right there. A close second is just how versatile Desert Door really is. You can go full highbrow and experiment with concocting a variety of cocktails that call for muddling fresh fruit, sprigs of thyme, sticks of cinnamon. It's perfect for that world. If you're a little bit more down home, if you've just rolled up the sleeves of your denim Wrangler button up, it's perfect for that as well. If you're just desiring something that's short and sweet, it hits the mark every time. Desert Door is genuine and authentically West Texan. It's inherently West Texan. They harvest Soto plants out in the wild and are knowledgeable conservationists at heart. That's obviously something incredibly important to me. They shine a light on what makes West Texas special and unique and worth preserving and keeping it safe from exploitation. Right now, you can find Desert Door all over Texas, Colorado, Tennessee, and there's budding numbers in places like New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Georgia. Best thing you can do is to check out DesertDoor.com to find where Desert Door is locally. Again, that's DesertDoor.com. If this is your first time listening to New Slang, go ahead, hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts. Of course, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, those are also great places to follow as well. And if you've been following along for a minute, you'll know that I have a new book coming out this next month. It's my debut book, and it's called The Lubbock Way. It's a collection of stories and thoughts and observations about the Lubbock music scene circa 2015 to 2017. I know, it feels like that's covering such a brief, small period, but it is also one of the most important periods. It is the rise of artists like Flatland Cavalry, Randall King, and Dalton Domino. You see a progression in the likes of William Clark Green. Like any scene, there's a lot of underrated artists like Wade Parks and Kenneth O'Meara. And of course, I try and capture the importance of people like Brandon Adams. Right now, you can go and pre-order The Lubbock Way over in the New Slang merch store. And of course, I just threw out some new t-shirts over there as well. They are the Bust the Hub Lubbock County ones. I think they came out looking pretty good, and I bet you will look pretty slick and Western if you're wearing one of these giant old school Lubbock County map t-shirts. Go order one. All the links that I just mentioned, they will be in the show notes. Which, I think that's about it on this. Let's get into it. Here are conversations with Courtney Patton, Walt Wilkins, and Drew Kennedy. All right, well, I'm sitting here with Courtney Patton. We are in Marathon, Texas. I'm from West Texas. I love West Texas. We're just doing some rapid fire with everyone today. So we're going to start off with, you know, what is like one of your favorite West Texas memories? Or what did you feel as you were driving into town? Like just the mood and what do you feel like makes this place a little special for you?
The space. It's the brightest you'll see the stars in Texas, I think. Of course, I grew up in the city in Fort Worth, and so I was never out far enough away that the light could shine like that. And last night as we were walking back from the shows, we just stopped, and I was like, you can see the entire Milky Way. You can see the entire Milky Way. One of my favorite memories here is I've played the Gauge several times, and I was trying, I'd written this song called What It's Like to Fly Alone, and it was about this hawk that flew out in front of my car when I was coming home from a gig one night. And as you come from Fort Stockton into town, there were just hawks in the few trees. You know, there's mesquites and cedars and all that, but there was one tree on the side of the road as you got close to Marathon, and it was just there. And it was there when I left, and I thought, I have to take a picture of this hawk. And I did. I got a picture of it, and then I got the cover shot of that record coming home out of Marathon, like just 2 miles down the road. Mm-hmm. And this hawk, I startled it by trying to take a picture, and it went flying, and I got a picture of it just perfectly in flight. And that I love every record I've ever made. I've used a picture that I've taken on an iPhone, no less. I should get a sponsorship. It's nothing for them, right? I would think.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, I was pretty proud. It was a very kind of moving moment for me to be able to feel the openness that you feel when you're down out here, and also to be able to kind of capture a little bit of it to preserve forever. So that was special for me.
Yeah. There was one time I was driving back from here to Fort Stockton, and there was a buzzard on the fence line, and it was so massive that I thought it was a statue, like a metal statue. So I turned back around to get a photo, and he, you know, spread his wings, and I was like, holy fuck, this is massive.
Massive wingspan.
Then he took off. Right. And I didn't get a photo, but it was one of those, he was so still and so massive that I thought he was a metal sculpture that somebody had just stuck on the fence line, because, you know, we're out here where that kind of shit happens.
Sure.
Like, you don't know what's an art installation and what is just like road work.
Right.
You
know, so. Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. I love that.
But the next thing we're going to talk about is connected to West Texas. What is like your, is there like a song or an album that you associate with West Texas that you just, I got to play it and it makes me feel like I'm out here?
Yeah, I'm a huge Robert O'Keefe fan. I always have been. And it's honestly, he was the reason I got into Texas music when I was in high school. And Gringo Honeymoon, the song Mariano is very West Texas feeling for me. There's something about the production on that album, everything about it just feels very, it just feels that. If you know that record, it's country, but it's also not. And that's a great story song. And I feel that out here.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of Marianos running around.
The thing with Robert O'Keefe, of course, is like you, for me at least, you kind of, in high school, you kind of get into those like, oh, the road goes on forever.
Oh, right.
And like Merry Christmas from the family. And you feel like it's very in this like kitschy kind of way.
Right.
And then you go into his catalog and you're kind of going, oh my God.
Oh,
like, there's, just so much layers to peel back.
And, yep. So many farm fresh onions. See what I did there? You like that?
Yeah, there you go.
My mom, it was John Boy and Billy on 92.5 KZPS. That was the morning show that played. And my mother bought the album solely for Merry Christmas from the family because that was the song that was played on that morning show. And so I was a kid and it was annoying. I was just like, it was my mom's music, you know? But then we listened to the whole record and that's when I was like, this guy's awesome. So I kind of fell in love, like begrudgingly, through Merry Christmas from the Family, which of course was funny and a brilliant song. But because my mom liked it, I was, you know, rebelling against it. But listening to that whole album, it just was like, oh, yeah, I want to do this. I want to learn how to do this.
Yeah, that's so I guess it was sometime during the pandemic where I jokingly had the make up your hypothetical best set list if you were just picking the songs for a Robert Earl Keane show. And mine, like 1 through 18, was Jesse with the Long Hair.
Yeah.
Like, could you just play that like 18 Over. Times in a row? Like,
that's great.
Because that to me just is like it's a timeless song where you feel like it's West Texas.
Sure.
And it feels like it could be 1888 or like 1988 or 2018.
Man, okay, there's also that one on Walking Distance, The Road to No Return. Mm-hmm. That feels very West Texas to me as well. I'm getting chill bumps talking about this. There's just like a certain kind of loneliness in it, in those songs that I love. I always have gravitated toward those kinds of songs. As you know, I also write them too. So
yeah, well, that goes into this next question on the list. And that is like guys like Robert Earl Keane,
right.
These songwriters, they're teachers in ways, but like they've not been a teacher for you. My mother was a teacher and I feel like they're obviously so underappreciated.
Sure.
And there's always that one or two song or teachers who you feel when you look back that kind of pushed you in a certain direction. Is there like one of those in your lifetime that you felt, you know, looking back as like had probably a little bit more of an impact on you becoming an artist than you realized?
I had two of them actually. Bonnie Decker was my fifth grade English teacher and we had a project where we got to do a hardback poetry book and we got to paint and color the outside of the book. And there was one that got kept at the school and then one got sent home with the family. And I actually ordered an extra one cause I was just loved poetry so much. And I made one and I wrote a poem for every one of my teachers. Cause that was when back in the day when you were A team, B team, C team. So I was 5A, fifth grade A team. So all of my teachers in A team got a poem and I always was able to put my feelings in words that way. And I'm sure looking back now, it would be quite juvenile, the things that I wrote. But she not only was a teacher, but I went to church with her. And so there was just this nurturing. There was just a nurturing that she had and encouraged me to do the things that she saw that I would be good at as I matured. I think she saw that in me. And then in middle school, Sharon Sullivan was my my English honors English teacher. She did the same thing kind of, she was like my school mom, you know, but, there were things that I didn't ever understand, but there were things that I was really good at. And I think poetry was always a really strong calling for me. And so I always loved music as well. And so when I got old enough to know that there was something I could do with my hands while I said my words, that was really fun. So I learned to play and she still will try to come out to my shows when I'm close. And that means a lot to me. So.
Yeah. It's always important. You know, obviously teachers are important, but I feel like there's a certain importance to showing you like to breed confidence in someone who, you know, as you said right now, looking back, they're probably very juvenile, but you know, it's important to champion stuff at certain ages.
Ryan Bingham had one, I live in Stephenville and Ryan and I played together in college and Ryan had a teacher at Stephenville High School, Jennifer Muncy, and he talks about it openly that she was a big part and he's treated her well. Like they actually got to go see him in show and he came out and visited with them afterwards, but she helped shape him a lot, you know, and I think he had a harder childhood. I had a very fortunate childhood, but she was a safe place for him and encouraged his art. And look at him now, mm-hmm. You know, it's really great. Teachers, They really do make a huge difference, and we should shout it from the mountaintops.
Yeah. No, it's that's what the one of the reasons why I even brought this question up was because obviously school is starting up now.
Yeah.
And you're seeing a lot of the Amazon wish lists.
Sure. Kind
of, and that's like so important. And I'm like, you know, we need to like fill up all those wish lists. And
absolutely,
that's been amazing. And at the same time, I'm like, they shouldn't have to do this. Like,
right.
They shouldn't have to like put all the this extra effort to get all of these things that should be, you know, taken
right.
care of, you know,
right.
already. And, you know, I remember like, you know, my mother always paying things out of pocket.
Yep.
And you just kind of.
You don't see that, right?
Yeah.
All these parents don't see that, right?
Yeah. So, yes, if you are a parent, and even if you're not a parent, like you should be, you know, all of this helps like society
absolutely.
going forward. So
yep.
That's how I feel about it. We're going to go back to West Texas
okay.
here in a second about this. Is there something in your catalog that you feel was written here while you're in West Texas, or that you just kind of feel like, you know, I captured a slice of a time here?
I have a song, and it's not quite West, but it was definitely meant to feel more desolate. Round Mountain. I wrote it with Larry Hooper, and it's meant to feel very kind of more older times, you know, like set back turn of the century when things were a little more desolate. You had to travel further to get things. There was probably a lot of poverty, and it was a mother who, you know, back then there was no birth control. There were a lot of children being had, and I think at one point you probably had kids because they worked on your farm and helped with family chores and things. I know that in my family that was the case. You know, there were so many kids. Not my nuclear family, but mm-hmm. my grandparents and things like that. So I like to feel that is set more in a setting like this, a little bit isolated from things, kind of lonely and haunting. And then there's another one. Hooper's kind of my guy, I guess, for this. There's one I wrote called Devil's Hand, and I actually started in Archer City, but finished it over time. And it was just that being in a small town, Texas, very, very dry, very quiet, very isolated from big cities. And just the loneliness that kind of creeps in situations like that. But I think that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think the hauntingly lonely is a very beautiful thing. So I gravitate toward it.
Yeah. I mean, like me and my friend Jeff, while we were setting up in here, you know, we're like talking about, we're from Ghost Hunters, you know, and this house right here.
It feels Ghost Hunter-y, doesn't it?
Yes.
These big, so huge, tall... But there's Sam Houston and mm-hmm. Stephen F. Austin right here in this room. And they're probably, I mean, how tall do you think that is? 5 foot? It's this feels like a cigar room to me. Like, I love the black ceilings, and
right.
it just feels like, you know, bros could be sipping on bourbon and smoking cigars in here and telling old tall tales.
Yeah, they very much could.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned starting that song in Archer City. I wanted to bring this up
sure.
as a point, and that is West Texas does feel old. And maybe this is like part of the thing of where you're relating these songs to mm-hmm. another time. And that what's important, I think, for a lot of people to realize and or understand is that West Texas, the line for West Texas is gradually going west. But
right.
West used to be like an Archer City.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
So, you know, I think a lot of our grandparents, our great-grandparents would relate those areas as being West Texas
sure.
too. And, you know, that's I think that's an important aspect of the West.
I agree. So. I agree very much. And honestly, for me to have grown up in Texas, I didn't come down here until I started playing music. And I was like, oh, this is a part of Texas I didn't even know existed in the most beautiful way. And it is an escape. I mean, it's almost a 7-hour drive from my house in Stephenville. And it's the whole drive. I hardly passed cars for the whole drive. I hardly passed cars. And I thought, this is awesome
yeah.
to just get out here kind of away from everything.
Well, when you are coming from Fort Stockton,
uh-huh.
there's that moment where like the valley breaks.
Oh
basically.
Yeah. I know exactly
and
where it is.
You just kind of go like, oh, can I just like drive? Can I get like on a car treadmill
mm-hmm.
and
just stay
just
right
be
here?
Like the drive. Forever.
I had this I had wrote it down. I even stopped, pulled over, and wrote this down because I looked out over right there where that opens up. And you see all those little cedar trees. They almost look like you could almost picture them being buffalo. And I just kind of had this very Old West feeling like, I need to write a song about the way this looks. Like, the trees look like buffalo that used to roam this land. You know, like this, that's the line. And whew, I want to do it. It really was. It was a very, I almost like traveled back in that instant, you know, in a place that I'd never been, but I felt like I'd been there before, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of the this bourbon cigar room right
here.
Oh,
man.
You know, New Slang, proud partners with Desert Door.
Yeah.
Desert Door here is in Marathon. We got to end it on like what is like what's been kind of like your go-to as far as the Desert
Oak
Door.
Aged and the little Sotol cup last night, the Copitas. Last night I was saying was little Courtney cups because some of my friends call me Copa, so I was having fun with that. But yeah, that was delicious, and it's I think 100 proof. So I was very 100% alcohol. I was very very careful to sip it all night, and really really great flavor. And I've got this. We both have these cool bandanas on today. So yeah, it's and their bottles, their packaging is gorgeous. That blue bottle with the little leather cuff around the top. I want one just to put flowers in at my house. I'll have to see who I can hug to make that happen.
I think it can happen.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Courtney, it's been great.
Yeah, thanks,
with you.
Thomas. I appreciate it. You're still to this day the most favorite interview for an album that I've ever had in my life. And I hope you'll do that for my next one too.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
We appreciate you. See you later.
This episode of New Slang is brought to you by the Blue Light Live here in Lubbock, Texas. Blue Light has long been the heart and soul of the Lubbock singer-songwriter scene and has been a home away from home for some of Texas, Americana, country, and rock and roll's finest over the years. Talk with 99.9% of the songwriters who have come out of Lubbock and the panhandle at large over the past 20 years, and they'll point to just how integral and necessary the Blue Light is. With live music and touring slowly but surely coming back, spots like the Blue Light are getting back to their usual ways as well. That means music every night of the week. Do you want to see that schedule? Well, I've got a few options for you. One, go to their socials and give them a follow. That is at Blue Light Live on Twitter, at The Blue Light Live on Instagram, and of course, by just searching The Blue Light Live on Facebook. They're consistently posting that week's lineup of shows, as well as those heavy hitters that ought to be on your calendar that are coming up on the horizon. Two, check out BlueLightLubbock.com as well. There they have the full schedule, the cover charges, time, any of those specials that may be happening. While there, go check out their merch page. They have a wide range of hats, koozies, hoodies, sweaters, beanies, jackets, and so much more. You can, of course, get all of your merch needs when you go see your favorite band take the stage at Blue Light. Just ask the bartender and they will get you all set. Speaking of which, that's another great way of seeing who's playing there. Just go to the Blue Light. It's at 1806 Buddy Holly Avenue here in Lubbock, Texas. And of course, again, that is BlueLightLubbock.com. I'll throw a link into the show notes too. Maybe I'll see you there. Okay, let's get back to the show. Now I'm sitting down with Walt Wilkins. Same situation as we just did with Courtney. Same five questions. Hopefully kind of a different kind of conversation, though. So as you guys know, we're in Marathon, the Songwriter Festival down here. And, you know, I'm starting all these off with, you know, about West Texas. And, like, Walt, do you have, like, a favorite West Texas memory or... Or what do you kind of feel when you're driving into this place?
My dad is from north of here. He's from Mitchell County, Colorado City. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I spent time visiting that family. We came out here. I came out here the first time I was 15 or 16 when my grandmother married her third husband, who had a big ranch south of Marfa near Casa Piedra. And so, you know, it blew my mind. I remember his ranch was cool. It had a little airstrip, and it was the scale of everything, the expanse. I just loved it. instantly. And I remember taking him, Earl Hammond was his name, Mr. Earl, drove us, my dad and mom and I guess, probably, maybe my grandmother too. Anyway, we drove south from here, you know, and did River Road and Presidio and saw all that, went to see Shafter, the ghost town, and walked around there. You know, it was just this great day of driving and seeing it when I was 15 or 16. And so anyway, and then I visited his ranch a couple more times, and really, it just really drew me out. I mean, I really love this area. I feel very at home here.
Yeah, that River Road, it doesn't matter how many times you take it.
Right.
It's, you still find something like it's the first time.
Yeah, it's amazing. In fact, I took my wife in February. Mm. It was her first time to see it.
Yeah. And like that ghost town Shafter right there, it's like, you know, it's from another world. It's another from another time where you kind of feel like you've stumbled across something that, you know, how long has this been here? Since the beginning of time.
Yeah, it is. It's really, yeah, there's so many ghosts out here, you know. Mm-hmm. I think the good kind, you know, it's, I like space more than not. Like, I don't ever want to be in a jungle. But I like it out here.
Yeah, there's, I've tried to explain to people growing up out here, going anywhere east Texas, yes, trees are beautiful. But, like, there's something very, very, like, they just, it feels like they're just coming in on you. And mm-hmm. I kind of get a little bit of that claustrophobic feeling where out here it feels like I can breathe and just, like, relax for a second. Which leads to, like, the second question here. And that is, like, you know, West Texas has a certain kind of lore, a very, you know, built mythos. Mm-hmm. And songwriters forever have been writing about West Texas. What is, like, is there a song in particular or a record in particular that you feel, that you just instantly feel like that is, like, a side of West Texas that you love to throw on to, you know, kind of teleport back into this kind of space?
Well, there's so many great ones, cowboy songs and all that. The song Because the Wind by Joe Ely.
Mm.
I really love that song.
Yeah.
And then, like you were saying before, Thomas, I think it was Guy Clark songs that came from his childhood in Monahans. Those are, you know, those are meaningful for all of us, you know.
Yeah.
You and people like us, we sure hang a lot of meaning on those.
Yeah. Joe, like, Because the Wind, man, that's such a great song. Joe, I just, not for a new slang plug here, a couple episodes back, Joe Ely's on. So go listen to that one after you're finished with this. But, yeah, Joe capturing that Lubbock kind of just desolation.
Mm-hmm.
And it, there's this, what I love so much about guys like Joe specifically, or like the a lot of the Lubbock guys is a lot of times people are uncomfortable with that space in a song. And like those guys, it feels like they knew naturally that like emptiness is a sound too. And like, it feels like there's, again, like if I go back to the breathing thing, it feels like you can just breathe in a lot of those songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in your catalog that you feel like either that you wrote out here?
I definitely have a song that was inspired by right before I moved to Nashville. I went to the Devil's River and for the first time. And as soon as I got to Nashville, I mean, day two, I was already homesick. And I wrote a song that one morning called A Little Farther West, which was me thinking about the Devil's River, how much, you know, like you're talking about East Texas, Nashville's all the woods, you know, the South, and it just doesn't do anything for me. And never felt at home there. So I was already about homesickness, and I wrote that song. It's called A Little Farther West from the Devil's River.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The West Texas thing is just the homesickness aspect of any place. I very much feel in tune with that, where you kind of always miss it when you're away from it.
Yeah. If you're used to sky, it's hard to live without sky. I have another song called Ruby's Two Sad Daughters, which was from the Panhandle.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a place a real place in Groom, Texas, east of about 35 miles east of Amarillo. So there's two West Texas songs.
You know what's, this is like super naive on my part, but it's kind of funny looking back is obviously growing up in Fort Stockton, living in Lubbock now, but growing up in Fort Stockton, looking at any of the maps of the panhandle, I just thought like there was no towns up there other than Amarillo, Lubbock, and like a couple of little towns, but there was nothing up there. And then talking with friends who grew up there, they really much thought the same thing about West Texas, that there was no, how could anyone live out there other than in Odessa, Midland, mm-hmm. and like El Paso?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I find it incredibly just strange, or not strange, but like just the human condition of being able to carve out a place in places that were deemed no man's land. Like, just why would anyone want to live out here? And of course, like, there's a thousand little towns
mm-hmm.
in these places, and people inhabit them, and they are prideful about these little places, you know?
Yeah. Sounds like no trees.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing too about of course, all the panhandle stuff is the names are just so simple. Like the
Happy.
Yeah. Happy Texas. And it's always like, you know, level land, plain
level land,
Dickens, you know, yeah. just these incredibly plain spoken names.
Yeah, and this area I think is filled with the like I said the mythos. It's heavy here.
Mm-hmm.
It's deep. I mean, all the images we grew up with, cowboys, the natives, the pioneers, outlaws, trail drives, you know, that all, it's just, it doesn't feel very far when you walk down any street. It feels all pretty immediate, all those stuff, I think.
Yeah, it's the, as me and Courtney were just talking about, you know, that line of where West Texas began was so much further east at some point. And like those towns, you know, like Archer City, even a town like that, that was West Texas at some point, mm-hmm. you know. And it feels like obviously that line just gradually goes further west every year or whatever. But places like this are still capturing that old west mm-hmm. feel. And you know, you walk outside and we're like on dirt roads here, mm. you know, and people are still living in these places like that. And, yeah, it's, the reality, but also, you know, you're a songwriter, you know, that like these places, are great places for you to daydream about like what it was yesterday. Like what is tomorrow? Like your,
mm-hmm.
what are these stories? What are these roads? What stories do they tell? You mm-hmm. know, has there been like a teacher or like anyone in your life that like in that capacity that when you look back, you kind of feel, oh, they pushed me in this direction.
I wish I did have a teacher I could point to and say this teacher at school changed my life. I don't, but I'd say that my dad's record collection was kind of a good teacher. The records that really hit me when I was, you know, about 6, 7, 8 years old, were Glenn Campbell records filled with Jimmy Webb songs and every other he and his people just picked out great timeless songs. Those records still sound fantastic. So, I mean, I knew by the time I was 13 that I'm going to write songs. And I have no doubt that came from all the great songs on those Glenn Campbell records, you know. And, of course, I'm a kid not understanding the emotional content, you know, or probably much of any of it. But it still grabbed me, you know, and I understood the emotional part, if not all the language, you know.
I feel like there's, for a lot of songwriters, this is kind of a light bulb moment. And that's whenever you realize, like, all the names, like, in the liner notes of these records, that these are songwriters. These are the songwriters. How important was that?
All of us that do this, we're obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
Liner notes. Back when it was really fun, you know, vinyl. Yeah, always. Always looked who the writers were, you know, and started connecting dots and seeing whose names came up a lot. Yeah. Constantly.
Yeah. I think it's obviously easier in this age to go and find those songwriters
mm-hmm.
catalogs, but you know, it was still like, and of course, like I'm, you know, I didn't grow up with vinyl all the time or anything like that, but I love the pursuit of finding that songwriter who, you go, well, this person so-and-so wrote this song, and this song. I want to hear like everything else he did or she did, and then going and finding, pursuing that.
Yeah.
Do you have any, is there like a songwriter that you remember kind of chasing down, trying to find like a solo record or?
Man, lots of them. I'm glad you, that's a great question. I'm sure I heard, saw Jesse Winchester's name first on the back of some other, you know, his songs have been recorded by so many people. And then going from record to record, finding Jesse Winchester records. Yeah, I don't know. I think we all do that.
Yeah.
We're obsessive. So there's Lee Clayton, who wrote Ladies Love Outlaws. And I was like, man, that's cool. And found some other stuff by Lee Clayton and ended up getting to know him a little bit in Nashville. That was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine like, yeah, you were around whenever obviously like this old guard was still around. And like, of course.
Some of the guys who were my heroes were still around there. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever, were you ever able to meet? I know a lot of people have like Guy Clark stories.
Do you I met Guy in my first year there. And I wouldn't say became friends at all. But he was always in four different meetings where we had some kind of conversation. He was kind to me. And he was very kind. Yeah, Nashville's filled. You know, John Prine lived down the street. And so I never spent any time with him, but I saw him around town. You know, Nashville's great for that.
Right.
To remind you every day of the kind of walking among legends still, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, obviously, I never met Guy. And I obviously, had I had the chance, I would have met him. And I would have loved to have talked with him. But in this weird way, like, it's, I feel like it's made him a little bit more legendary in my mind.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Still like that distance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a... But yeah, there's plenty of people who you kind of, you know, you try and meet and you pick their brain and hope you don't sound like a, you know, a bothersome fan or something. But, you know,
well, yeah. He was used to it. I think, you know, people could get pretty nervous around him.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty imposing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great stories about him, but he was great to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are obviously, again, in Marathon. One of the presenting partners here at for New Slang is Desert Door. Desert Door is here, and they've been pouring drinks and stuff. What do you think about Desert Door? And like, what's been kind of like your?
It's great. I'm not kidding. I wouldn't lie about this. It's the first time I really, really had Sotol, and I found it great to sip.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a drink with a little bit of orange juice and Topo Chico. Michael over across the street. The bartender last night, we kind of came up with that, and it was good.
Yeah.
And I could sip on it and take my time, you know, not get in too much trouble.
Yeah. It's that smokiness that feels...
A little bit, but not like mezcal, because I don't like mezcal. It's too heavy, too smoky.
No, that's...
Soto was right on.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to having one
little
more.
Bit of smokiness, that there's a touch of vanilla, and it's so smooth.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I picked up on the vanilla, too. It was great. Yeah.
It's been incredibly great talking with you.
Oh, Thomas, thanks, man. Nice to meet you again.
We can do this again in a long form.
Whatever you want.
Zoom call, phone call, something like that. We'll do it.
You'd probably find out I'm not very interesting.
This episode is in part brought to you by Charlie Stout Photography. Charlie Stout has long been a great buddy of mine. And for as long as I've known him, he's always had a good eye. A good eye for ideas, for lines in a song, and notably, an eye for what makes a great photograph. Yes, we're going to roll with that tried and true cliche about a great photographer having a good eye. But it's cliche for a reason. More often than not, it means it's true. Right now, I want y'all to head on over to charliestout.com to get an idea of what I'm talking about. While you're at it, go give him a follow on Instagram and Twitter at Charlie Stout. Right now, he has about 50 photographs for sale on charliestout.com, with a vast majority of those being landscapes and sky shots of West Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The American Southwest, if you will. A lot of cacti and clouds, windmills and open roads, sunsets and stardust. He captures a lot of what I love about West Texas and these dry, arid climates. That's mainly that vast emptiness that can really make you feel small, the depth and the weight and the intensity, it's all in there. Right now, he's doing a special on his prints. Each week, he releases a new photo, and for 1 week only, that photograph is at a special introductory rate. For just $25, you'll get an 8.5 by 11. That's just about half off the regular price. For $75, you can get a 13 by 19, and for $110, you can get a 17 by 22. After the week, they go back to regular prices, which are still an absolute steal if you ask me. Also, just a pro tip, keep a watchful eye out on his Twitter. He's consistently posting one-offs, errors, and randoms on there that are for sale that are in the flash sale variety. Again, that is at Charlie Stout for Twitter and Instagram. Head on over to charliestout.com, grab a signed print, buy a record, get yourself some nature sounds and some nature shots. All right, let's get back to the episode. Drew Kennedy, who's the brain trust behind Marathon Songwriter Festival, and I feel like you're going to have a lot of really insightful questions or answers to these, because clearly Marathon, you sought out a place like this for a festival like this, and you've of course have had this healthy obsession with West Texas, like a lot of us have, and you know, I want to start off with, you know, do you have like a specific like favorite memory about a place like this in West Texas, or, you know, what do you kind of feel like as you're driving out here and it opens up into nothing?
First of all, I am glad you're here, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I guess once the country entirely got settled, all of the, you know, the manifest destiny of going all west was realized, right or wrong. Everybody claimed their spot, and it was done. But during the claiming, you know, like Texans like to talk about Yankees or East Coasters or whatever. I'm from Pennsylvania. It's like, you're all from the East Coast too. It's just how far back can you go? Because you came from Ireland and landed in Boston, and somebody was like, screw Boston, I'm going to Kentucky. And then the next generation was like, screw Kentucky, I'm going to Texas. So, event, you know, like, there's this grand history of westward migration for people seeking adventure. I think as a songwriter, you are naturally an adventure seeker. And the first time I came out here, just past the Longfellow Ranch in Sanderson, I crested this hill, and the Union Pacific tracks are right alongside it, and I could see the entire freight train in my field of vision, front to back. And I've told this story before, and it was like one of those things that you don't realize you've never seen until you've seen it, because where I grew up, we have trees and mountains and stuff. There's no wide open space like that. And so my first trip out here, I was just like, oh my gosh. And you look at the clouds and you watch a thunderstorm move for 20 miles that never gets you wet. And, you know, you smell the creosote in the air, and you hear the train coming. You see it coming for miles, and you meet the people, and you just think, man, I know we don't get to pick where we're born or any of that stuff, but I feel really lucky to have found that place in the world that vibrates at the same frequency that I do. And it's here. And I know you can appreciate it because you're from out here too.
Yeah. Well, it's even, and I've brought this up multiple times already in these conversations here, I am still, like, my jaw drops when you're driving from Fort Stockton to here. Mm-hmm. And you know exactly where I'm talking about, where it opens up.
It all opens up.
And, you know, you just kind of wish, like, I said this during the Courtney one, if there was like a car treadmill that you could just like ride on forever, right there in that same spot, and just like that could be your drive.
I think about, like, you know how they set up all the forts out here to protect the railroad and the trade route going west. And a bunch of guys picked the spring at Fort Stockton. They were like, okay, right here. This is going to be a good spot. I think about the first guy that drove or that rode a good hard ride all day south and got to that point and just looked around and was just like, shit, if we would have ridden for one more day, it could have looked like this, you know? Like, it just, it's a magnificent transformation that it unfolds so quickly, it doesn't seem real. It doesn't seem realistic that it could do that. Mm-hmm. And like all of a sudden, the cedars get smaller and smaller in the course of like a 3/4 of a mile, smaller and smaller, then they're gone, and then it's all grassland. You're like, how did that just happen? I don't know how it happened, but it does. It's pretty beautiful, that's for sure.
Yeah, the native plants around here, me and Jeff were just talking about as we were driving around how, oh, that right there, there's been a handful of things that we've both have tried to get in our yards in Lubbock, and they just don't work.
They won't grow.
Yeah. And it's like, it's damn hard to even get anything.
I've spent 10 years trying to grow Ocotillo in New Braunfels, and they all die.
Yeah.
It's my favorite plant. When we shot the open road video out here, the lead character, this awesome girl named Erin Stevie, we were driving through the park, and she was like, those things look like plants underwater, except we're not underwater. It's like, that's the best description of an Ocotillo I've ever heard. You're right. It does look like underwater plants. But they don't grow in New Braunfels. Same thing. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. That leads naturally to this other question right here. And I know you probably have, there's going to be like 10, 15, 20 things that pop up for you. But is there like anything specific? Like, what's the first song that you think of when it comes to West Texas that's in your catalog that either you wrote out here or you started writing out here or was just inspired or you're trying to capture a slice of this world?
The first song I wrote out here 10 years ago probably, I've never recorded because it's not right yet, but it's this song called Midnight in a Motel Room. And I wrote it at the hotel. I mean, I've probably written 35 or 40 songs out here. I brought Patrick Droney out here, and we holed up in a little greenhouse over there, and we wrote 5 songs. I brought my buddy Davis Nash out here to write songs. We were just here 2 weeks ago making a record in a house. And the whole concept behind that record is me mining all of the songs I've written either out here or directly after being out here. And so the earliest one was Midnight in a Motel Room, and I've not gotten it right, but it's not dead yet. But, I mean, there's not a lot of places where, like, you go play your show, and let's face it, you don't book the Gage Hotel because it's going to be a life-changing show for you. You book the Gage Hotel because you put in 2 hours worth of work and you get this. You know, you get to, and if you want to stay for 3 days, cool, we'll put you up for 3 days. And you get to mine your creative, you know, inspirations as you're just wandering around. And I mean, I've per capita, like per square footage, I've probably come up with more songs in this town than any other location, including Nashville, you know. Just walking around. The first time I ever came out here, I could have been drunk, but I went for a walk after my show, and it was a moonless night, and there were no clouds, and I swear to God, I could see my shadow on the ground from starlight. I don't think that might even be possible, but if it is, it's possible out here, right?
Yeah. So. It's definitely possible, even with just the sliver of crescent.
Yeah.
It's possible because your eyes, they adapt.
Yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden, you know, it's you realize why the pirates had like a eye patch on
right.
because of like that.
That's right.
You can see in the dark kind of thing. And, you know, one iPhone flicker and it's disappears.
Over. It takes another hour to get back to it. I know. It's crazy.
You obviously, you've been juggling time between Nashville, New Braunfels, and you've been writing with a bunch of people. And clearly, if you're having a songwriter festival in Marathon, you know, you're bringing songwriters here, but, you know, and you just mentioned it in passing, bringing people here, but have you brought multiple people here for like any kind of retreat or like, what do you kind of tell people to coax them to come?
Every time I try to do that, and like, I'm lucky that the publishing company that I write for now is a big company, so they've got a budget. Every time I start talking about it, because my wife pointed out to me that, like, you think because you love it, everyone else should love it too? I'm like, yeah, that's true. It's like, it's not true. Like, you let everyone else love their own things. I go, okay, that's probably true. I start talking about it, especially in Nashville, and I was like, that sounds amazing. That's what it's like in out here? Yeah. So let's do a writer's retreat. I know a guy. We can get it all set up. That's awesome. And then they start looking up how far away it is from anything. And they're like, 5-hour drive from the airport? I'm like, me on a good day, 5 hours, maybe 6. You know, we know this rich guy that has a house on a lake that's 30 minutes from here. Let's just have the retreat there. So it's been a bit of a challenge to try and get people out here, mm-hmm. coupled by the fact that maybe I have this blind spot where I think, like, if I am inspired, surely you must be inspired. And that's probably a character flaw. But I've never been successful to get a group of people out here, but I've gotten them one by one. And with the generous sponsorship of the Gage, like, we'll give you a place to stay for 5 days if you play one show for free, you know. And so, cool, we'll come right for 5 days and play a show, covered. That's the barter system is how songwriting, you know, works. We all get along doing shit like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's that the drive, the 6 hour that you realize, oh, how far.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, that's part of the magic.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like, that's the toll that you have to pay.
And if you're willing to pay it, you will be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
By a sunset or by a ranch water or by the sound of a train in the distance. Like, whatever that reward is, if you pay the toll, you'll be rewarded. Like, we're sitting right here in the Captain Shepherd's house. This guy that was running the surveying crew for the railroad as they were expanding west, trying to drive that golden spike to meet between the two. And he got out here and he was like, man, this looks like Marathon Greece. And you have to think, like, everybody in his work crew were just like, you fucking say so, Cap. We have no idea. You're the only one we know that's been out there. He's like, that's what it looks like. And he bought this land from the railroad and built this house. And this was the first, he did it up big too, but like this was really one of the first spots. And it's all East Coasters going west. Buffalo soldiers at Post Park at Fort Colorado Pena. Like the whitewashed version of the West, as far as the movies go, is ridiculous. Because this land was tamed by just about anybody that did not have the color of the skin that you and I have.
Right.
Asians, black people, you know, like... It was not, the cowboy does not look like the cowboy in John Wayne movies. The real cowboy is far more diverse than that. And I like a town like this that has kind of survived through it all, but we'll right out of the gate, we'll tell you, like, yeah, Fort Colorado Pena right down the road, Buffalo Soldiers, that was their spot. I just like that stuff. And this town kind of embraces it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and like Fort Stockton as well.
Yeah, Fort Stockton too, for sure.
So they were there as well. And yeah, you know, even today, if you're like on these ranches, there's less and less cowboys, but 9 times out of 10, they're still,
dude,
you know, Mexican Americans.
Vaqueros, just, man, doing their thing.
So it's, as I think like a lot of people don't realize, or people do realize this, and is you know, a lot of this work is hard work and people think it's beneath them. And, you know,
always
sometimes like it's not the case. It shouldn't be viewed that way. But
for sure. My whole purpose in kind of making a record that has nothing but songs that came from out here is to specifically romanticize this area. So then we can have the conversation about how this town came to be.
Right.
Because I think it's important. And I know, you know, I'm a Yankee from Pennsylvania. I could be totally an outsider, but at the same time, sometimes it takes an outside view of something to be like, hey, just so you don't forget.
Right.
Just in case you need some conversation point to jump off into, you know, having a meaningful conversation with somebody about where we come from, how this town exists, where we're going. Here's this, and here's this spot in the middle of nowhere that the people that built it got the job because nobody else wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just looking for work. and we get to enjoy the spoils of it. But this place was tamed by people who needed the work that bad, because the rest of us were like, no, I'm not doing that job. And I just like shining a light on that, and maybe it starts a conversation with somebody. And if not, you know, you still have cool songs, I think, and it sounds neat, but that's kind of the purpose. That's why I like this place, is that reason, is that, hey, we should have this conversation, because the people that started this place do not look like you think they did.
Right. Well, that's the, and I feel like I've done a good job at times and not a good job at times. What one of my big things that I feel, you know, these conversationalists, these journalists, one of your jobs is to talk about the romanticism and build up the romanticism and the lore, and then simultaneously go, also that songwriter was just a person. Like, yeah. Guy Clark is a god, but he's also just a dude.
Yeah.
And like, let's talk about all the things that he did that were magical that someone put on paper and played, but then also show you that they were a flawed human being just like everyone else.
Just like everyone else. I know the son of a very famous songwriter a little bit, and not a great dad. Not a great dad. And I can't imagine, like, walking around, if somebody finds out that this kid, this guy's the son of this guy, everybody said, oh my God, that's a giant. He's a giant.
Right.
And in his brain, he's like, yeah, maybe to you, but he was an asshole to me growing up. Like, they're just human beings, exceptionally flawed.
Yeah.
But some people just have the eye for what makes a good song and have the ability to string lines together, and it really, like, it works in such a unique way that we forgive them all of their human faults and just celebrate the magic.
Yeah. Speaking of celebrating the magic, what is, like, the list is going to be forever, but what is that? You're in New Braunfels. You're mm-hmm. at your home. You're in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I need to be teleported back to West Texas.
Yeah.
What is there a song or a record that you throw on that you just want to, like,
yeah,
take that moment that to get away? What is
it's
that?
It's the All the Pretty Horses soundtrack that Marty Stewart and a bunch of people did.
Mm-hmm.
It, man, I can put that on and close my eyes and I am here. And the fact that it's tied to a Cormac McCarthy story doesn't hurt, but I can close my eyes and I'm here when I listen to that. That is my absolute go-to. Do you have one?
I mean, I would always point back to, like, Terry Allen stuff, but specifically, like, Lubbock Allen, everything is very, very Lubbock. But yeah. I think Juarez is still, like, is like, that's the one that we don't talk about nearly enough.
Because that is an avant-garde piece of work, man.
Well, it's because it's difficult. It's one of those, it's like hardtack. You have to. Like,
yeah, it's challenging.
You know, yeah. I remember talking with Evan Felker about Juarez and how he loved Juarez, but there was two things, and it was like, one, I lose my place in it each time, but each time I listen, I go a little bit further into understanding what it is. And then the other one that he brought up, and I was like, well, I mean, that's actually, I've not really thought about that. And that is like, did he nail it? Did he actually do what he thought he was wanting to do? Because it's something he's returned to mm-hmm. a thousand times mm-hmm. because that's, like, really his muse is that Juarez story, those characters. And I think he may be onto something, because maybe he feels like he needs to get it a little bit better each time with either, like, the radio play or, like, the art or whatever. And of course, like, Terry will never put it into a movie because he wants those characters to be faceless, and he doesn't want ever.
And that's there smart. To be,
yeah.
That's smart. And you return to it because you know he knows that he didn't nail it.
Mm-hmm.
That's that force of inspiration that draws you back time and time again, is knowing that you're getting closer each time. Didn't nail it that time. Gonna try again. Like, you know, I mean, I don't know if songwriters really talk about this that much, but I really think that songwriters write the same song 8 or 10 times over the course of their lives. It's just, they change, you know, they morph, they're trying to get it right this time. But there are, like, really strong connections that songwriters revisit over the course of their entire creative lives time and time again because you feel compelled to do it. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's this place for me. Maybe this record that'll come out next year will be it, but I will bet you $100 bill that I probably try it again in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's just, it's that elusive thing that you chase. And gosh, I mean, Terry Allen's work has spanned all sorts of different medium, from audio to sculpture. I mean, the dude's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's completely underappreciated in the Mount Rushmore of the Texas songwriter. He is probably the most underappreciated of all of them because he was exploring intellectual ideas and was probably the only one doing it and making a living doing it. Like, who the fuck comes out with a truckload of art? Right. Asking this existential question, is it art if it's burning on the highway and no one's around to see it? Like, yeah. Comporting the idea of the tree falling in the forest to art burning on that. Like, who was doing... Nobody was doing that.
That song right there is also like... It sounds like it could have happened.
Right.
And you're you not sure. It. And you're like, do I need to start going through newspaper clippings?
Yeah.
And then if you also feel like... If you ever ask Terry if it was real, he would look at you and go, "Well, fucking course not. It's not real, you stupid idiot." But it feels...
I feel like him and Tom Russell. I would be remiss if I didn't say Tom Russell. But I feel like those are the two guys mm-hmm. that are going deeper than anybody else.
Yeah.
Telling this story. And Tom Russell's with the El Paso thing, you know, like Juarez, the stealing electricity. Like all the, he's revisiting those same things because I think we're compelled to do it because we know we haven't. We have not properly thanked whatever this muse is that inspires you to be here. Mm-hmm. And so you keep going back because you just want it to be proud of you. Like, I don't know how to do it. I'm doing my best. And it doesn't seem worthy.
Yeah.
Here I am in Marathon, Texas. And I know it's Marathon by the locals, but I can't say it. Here I am in Marathon. It's given me so much, and I can't give enough back.
Yeah.
So maybe we donate a guitar to the library. Maybe we have a big raffle where, you know, like we could support the community somehow, but I do not know how to give this part of the world back what it's given me.
Yeah.
And so I keep trying in songs because that's all I know how to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Has there been like ever like a, you know, a teacher that you feel, you know, pushed you into this direction that in like, in hindsight, you kind of go like, oh, you know?
Yeah. It's a complicated history with this guy, but I got a guitar when I was 20 in college, and I was playing baseball, and I was studying what ended up becoming an ancient Middle Eastern history degree at an all-guys school in Virginia. And I've always loved music, never really attempted it, like piano lessons in seventh grade or something. And then decided, like, you know what? I'd like to mess around with an acoustic guitar. Let me do it. And so I got an acoustic guitar from my grandfather, like $300 black Yamaha acoustic guitar. And I'm the kind of person that if I get really excited about something, it's a cannonball off the high dive, right? Like, I'm all in. And so... This might be my... Is this my fourth time on a new slang-branded podcast? So maybe I've told this story before. At least third.
I think this may be three. Yeah.
But I got this guitar. I taught myself 7 chords. And then I wrote a song. And I'm a jock at an all-dudes school who's also up to his earlobes in nerdery going back into ancient Middle Eastern history. I don't have anybody in my friend circle, in my influence circle, that know anything about music, that play, that do anything. I'm kind of out on this island on my own, and I don't know how it works. But it seems like you make sound to be heard. And so there was one bar in Farmville, Virginia, called Land Sharks, which was actually the telegraph station, and they sent the telegraph that the Civil War was over. Appomattox Courthouse, Virginia, is like 20 miles away, and it was the closest telegraph station, and it came from this building. General Lee has surrendered. But at that time, it was a bar and a restaurant, and I had been playing guitar for 3 weeks, and I booked a show there. And there was a guy in the audience who ran a very early Americana radio station in Farmville, Virginia. It was the local, it was like KNBT in New Braunfels. WFVL in Farmville, Virginia was KNBT for Farmville, Virginia. And he came up to me after I took a set break and was like, "Hey man, I dig what you're doing. How long have you been doing it?" And I was like, 3 weeks. He's like, "Yeah, I can tell. Come by my office." And I came by his office, and he gave me 250 CDs. It was Walt Wilkins, Fire, Honey, and Angels, Billy Joe Shaver, Susan Gibson. It was the first time I ever heard Guy Clark. It was the first time I ever heard Robert Earl Keen. Like, I couldn't believe that songwriters were out there doing this, and it wasn't the biggest thing in the world. And so this guy, the one common thread was almost all of them were from Texas. There was a couple, like Trent Summer and the New Row Mob were out of Nashville. You know, like they were like the Billy Block, like renegade Nashville people in the late 90s, early 2000s. But almost all, Jason Boland was in there. Almost all of them were from Texas. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to go down there and figure it out. What's the deal? And that's how I got here, was that guy.
Yeah.
And he has a complicated legal history, so I won't be mentioning his name. But he, you know, for all of the bad things he probably did, he did a pretty good thing for me, and it got me here. Without him, there's no chance. There's 0% chance I get here.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple of, like, life moments. Like, I remember right after getting that, playing baseball, I basically had one free weekend a year because you have the fall season, then you have the spring season, which is the real one. But in the fall, as a sophomore or whatever, we had one weekend off, and my roommate at the time was from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and that was 2 hours away, and my home was 6 hours away. So I just went home with him for that weekend, and his brother was bar backing his way through UNC Law School in Chapel Hill, and we were 19 or 20, and he was like, "Yeah, come on, I'll get you in the bar." It was this place called the Cat's Cradle, and Whiskey Town was playing, and the lead singer of Whiskey Town played seven straight songs with his back to the audience, and I was just like, I don't know what this guy is, but I really like whatever I'm hearing. Like, and it's little moments like that that all add up,
yeah,
that bring you, it's like, okay, I think I want to, whatever this is, I want to figure it out.
Yeah.
So.
Just those little nudges.
Yeah, right. You know? Those little things. It's like, shit, I'm probably not as good as that guy, but he just played seven songs with his back to the audience, and if he can make a living, I could surely figure out how to make a living.
Right.
So, yeah, little things like that.
Last question right here. Okay. And that's the, you know, new slang. We're presented by Desert Door.
Yeah.
Desert Door is here.
Come on.
We love Desert Door. What is like your, what's your kind of your go-to cocktail when it comes to the door?
I mean, door influenced ranch water is my go-to. You know, there's like, you got two choices, well, more than two, but you got, if you want to go Blanco, tequila, whatever. You want to go Sotol, it's got a little more of the smoky flavor. When you mix it with Topo Chico and lime, that so tall, like the vanilla flavors that pop out of it, like a Desert Door ranch water is like dessert. Mm-hmm. Regular trash Blanco tequila ranch water, that's like getting work done. But if you want to treat yourself, you go get a little bit of that, you know, oak aged smoky Desert Door, and you throw it in there. Ooh,
yeah,
that's a good one. So that's my go-to. How about you?
Okay, so like I'm not like a bartender. I'm not Dustin Six who can just get something, Six, you know, made in like 2 seconds. But I'll make one of the Palomas,
yeah,
with some grapefruit, and I always nurse it with a little bit of Topo to add some of that bubbly.
You got to have the carbonation,
and then the it's super simple, super basic, but just some of that Mexican Coca-Cola with some Dor, throw a couple of limes in.
Okay.
There you
That's
go.
That's my next drink. I'm going to fire that one up now.
That's pretty damn
good. Hey, man, thank you for being such a wonderful champion for dreamers.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, that's who you are. And you put everything that you have behind it. And I'm proud to be a friend because it's really, we couldn't do what we do without someone like you behind us. So thanks, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
All right, y'all, that is it for this one. Again, this is the first of a two-parter. Conversations with Josh Grider, Kelly McQuay, and Bobby Hamrick are coming out later this week. Go check out our pals over at Desert Dor, The Blue Light Live, and Charlie Stout Photography. Go order my debut book, The Lubbock Way, and grab a new Bust the Hub t-shirt in the merch store. And yeah, I'll see y'all later this week for another episode.